The next section is section G for company vans and company van fuel benefit. It's another brown section, so attracting Class 1A national insurance contributions, and we have working sheet number 3 that can be used to assist you calculate the cash equivalent of the vans made available. A van means a vehicle of a construction primarily suited for the conveyance of goods or burden of any description, which doesn't include carrying people. It has to have a design weight not exceeding 3,500 kilograms. Potentially, we can come against problems with double cab pickups. Their classification as a car or van will depend on the VAT treatment. But if there's a payload of 1 ton, in other words, 1,000 kilograms or more, it will be accepted as a van, although that only applies to double cab pickups. Two-door vehicles of this type normally are accepted as a van. Beware of any vans that have been adapted to become cars. Company van charge will be nil if both the following requirements are satisfied throughout the year. Firstly, it must only be available for business travel and commuting, and must not be used for any other private purpose except to an insignificant extent. It must be available mainly for use for the employee's business travel. Let's deal with the first part. So, employees are now allowed to have a company van that they can use for back and forth to work in addition to business travel, and will not be taxed on the company van unless they've got open use of the van. In other words, able to use it for shopping, for going to the football, for going on holidays. Fully taxable as a benefit if that was the case. The vans must be available mainly for use for the employee's business travel. So you can't have someone working in a profession or industry where they don't need a company van being provided with a van because it would be a cheaper taxable benefit or non-taxable benefit. They have to need the van for work. If both the requirements are not met, the company van will be charged for £3,000 for 2011-12. We've got some guidance in the HMRC booklet 480 on the meaning of insignificant. There's no legislative guidance, so we have to look at its ordinary meaning. But HMRC have said that private use will be considered insignificant if it is insignificant in quantity in the tax year, in other words, used for a few days at most. If it's insignificant in quality, and a week's private use for a holiday would not be insignificant. If any private use is intermittent and irregular. And if it is the exception in the pattern of use of that van by that employee. Examples of insignificant private use given by the revenue since this first came in was taking an old mattress to the tip once or twice a year, making a slight detour to stop and get a newspaper on the way to work, or calling at the dentist on the way home. For the van fuel charge, this won't apply if fuel is made available only for business travel. So the question we have to ask our clients, is there any evidence to confirm this? The van fuel charge will not apply if the employee makes good the full cost of any and all private fuel. And the van fuel charge will not apply if the provision of the company van isn't taxed as a benefit in kind. You may come across the issue of pool cars or vans where the rules are basically the same. A car or van will only qualify as a pool car if all the following conditions are satisfied, and I can refer you to Chapter 15 of Booklet 480. First of all, it must be available to and actually used by more than one employee. It must be made available by reason of their employment. It must not ordinarily be used by one of them to the exclusion of the others. Any private use has to be merely incidental to the business use, such as taking a car from the pool on a Friday afternoon to travel down to Cornwall to do an audit on a Monday. The van mustn't, or car, mustn't be normally kept overnight on or near the residence of any of the employees unless on premises occupied by the provider of the car. In other words, if the business is based at the director's home and the van is or car is kept there, then it may qualify. Again, question to ask clients, is there a log and is there control over the use of the pool vehicles to prove that they are not provided as a benefit to employees or directors. Next section is section H for interest-free and low-interest loans. Again, a brown box, and again, we have a working sheet number 4. There's no benefit to report if the loan or more than one loan does not exceed the £5,000 de minimis limit at any time in the year. A taxable benefit will arise if a loan or loans exceeds that £5,000 figure and the loans were either provided interest-free or below the official rate of interest, which, as I've said already, was 4% for 2011-12. There are some qualifying loans which you can review in Appendix 5 of the booklet 480. And one point to always consider is directors' overdrawn loan accounts, because if a director has had an overdrawn loan account during 2011-12 and it exceeded the £5,000 limit, then there is likely to be a benefit to be reported, and it's irrelevant that the loan account may have been repaid before the end of the accounting period. Next section on the P11D is Section I, which is private medical insurance. We report medical and dental expenses or insurance premiums where the liability is the employer's. And again, a point I made earlier on, if the director or employee has their own medical insurance cover and it's reimbursed by the employer, that is going to be reported at Section B of the P11D, not here at Section I. But if it's a policy taken out by the employer, so a contract between the employer and the medical insurance provider, then potentially it will be reported here. There is no liability or reporting requirement for costs which are related specifically to overseas duties. There's no liability or reporting requirement for costs related to work-related injuries or diseases. There is an exemption, which I mentioned in one of the earlier podcasts, for medical screening or health checks, providing it's once a year. And there is an exemption for eye tests and glasses required for work use by computer and VDU screen users. But some HMRC officers may look to see that there is evidence from the ophthalmic optician that special glasses are needed. Next section is Section J for qualifying relocation expenses, payments and benefits. This is another brown box section, so Class 1A National Insurance Contributions, and we have work in Sheet 5 to help us do the calculation. We only have to report the excess over the £8,000 exemption limit. And the £8,000 exemption limit applies to qualifying expense payments and benefits in kind. Qualifying expense payments are those that are exempt, such as the cost of selling, purchase and removal. There is a time limit because costs are to be paid by the relevant day, which is 12 months after the end of the year of assessment in which the employee relocated. So if someone had been relocated in May 2011, the time limit for relief would be the 5th of April 2013. I've mentioned the tax relief limit of £8,000. It is per relocation. It is not an annual allowance or exemption limit. So we need to bear in mind any costs that were incurred in an earlier tax year. Section K applies to services supplied, a brown box section, Class 1A. We would report the cost to the employer of providing services such as perhaps legal conveyancing fees, accountancy fees. And if there is no marginal cost to the employer for providing free tax advice or free legal advice to their staff, then there would be nothing to report. We have the special rules for in-house provided services which stem from the Pepper v. Hart Malvern School case. Section L is assets placed at the employer's disposal. Here we have another brown box section, Class 1A liability, and we have to report the annual value, which is 20% of the cost or market value of the asset when first provided as a benefit, plus any additional costs in providing the benefit. So we would report a rent or hire charge if that is more than the annual value. There will be no charge on some assets provided for use in the performance of the duties because of the exemption that applies. And there will be no charge on some assets for disabled employees, which I mentioned earlier, so such as providing a wheelchair or providing hearing aids so someone can do their work. Section M is the only dual section on the P11D where we have a choice of either blue or brown boxes. HMRC's P11D guide tells us to enter the following items in the brown box. So it has subscriptions, educational assistance, non-qualifying relocation benefits and expenses payments, incidental overnight expenses, and other benefits where the contract is between the employer and the supplier. And that's a crucial point for the brown box, contract between the employer and the supplier. Other items to report here include car van fuel for private cars or vans, not company cars or vans, car parking, although car parking at or near the place of work is exempt, Christmas boxes, clothing, staff entertaining social functions, holidays, meals and non-exempt training costs. So we're told all of these should be reported here. Staff entertaining is quite a subject on its own, and it really means hospitality of any kind provided to employees, such as a staff day at the races. We're not talking about business entertaining expenses that will be reported at Section N. In terms of staff entertaining come meals, discussing business is not a get out because we eat in order to live, not in order to work. So it potentially would be a taxable benefit for employees unless they're travelling and entitled to claim subsistence. Meals provided by the employer at or near the permanent place of work would normally be regarded as taxable staff entertaining, not allowable subsistence, and in many cases will be included in a PAY settlement agreement. Working lunches with other members of staff, if it's at or near the normal place of work, might be treated as a taxable staff entertaining benefit unless HMRC has agreed to issue a dispensation for perhaps modest lunch costs. Job-related training lunches would be exempt because it's part of the exempt job-related training. Section 264 exempts annual staff functions and similar parties, providing they're open to all staff generally and providing the cost per head doesn't exceed £150. It's important to remember that we have to include all the costs, including VAT, travel to and from the venue, any accommodation provided, additional drinks claimed on, expenses or company credit cards, and any other related costs. The £150 limit can be spread amongst more than one qualifying function. So the example I would give is a Christmas party costing £100, a summer barbecue costing £20, a Christmas party costing £100 a head, a summer barbecue costing £20 a head, total of £120, and then maybe an annual quiz night, and the emphasis would be it has to be an annual function, an annual quiz night costing £25 a head, the total for those three functions would be £145, they would all qualify. But if the total was to be, say, £160 a head, we'd have to exclude one of the three functions in order to get back within the exemption limit. It isn't an allowance, it is a limit. So any single function, if it were to cost more than £150 a head, will be taxable in full and perhaps would be included in a PAY settlement agreement. Now, turning back to Section M and the blue box entries for other items, the HMRC's P11D guide tells us to enter in the blue box employer-provided childcare if not exempt. But of course, we would declare vouchers at Section C, and here we would only declare other childcare benefits. We have to declare income tax paid at the accounts office in the year that the company failed to deduct the tax from a director's remuneration. And we have to declare loans written off, personal mobile phone costs, non-exempt training costs. Also within Section M Blue Box, we're told to report non-qualifying relocation expense payments or benefits that were exempt but exceeded the limit. Report ordinary clothing, in other words, not uniform, which would qualify for exemption, which are provided for employees' use. Report the full amount of any incidental overnight expenses if the limits exceed the exemption of £5 in the UK or £10 outside the UK. That's something where we would need to be looking at the hotel bills and seeing what's going down on there. Final section is Section N for expenses payments. We will not have to report expenses included in the P11D dispensation, which I would hope to see frequently in place. We would not report amounts that properly go into Section C for vouchers and credit cards. Otherwise, we're likely to report you're in the absence of a dispensation, travel and subsistence, entertainment, general expense allowance, although we'd question whether that ought to have gone through the payroll, payments for use of a home telephone, non-qualifying relocation expenses would be reported here, and any other expenses that haven't been reported elsewhere and need to be reported. We're told we have to report all business entertaining costs, and if someone's carrying on a trade or profession or vocation, we need to tick the box to tell HMRC if the expenses have been or will be disallowed. we put an X in the box if the costs are not going to be disallowed. Final section, summary. PLMD reporting, as I've said already, can be an onerous task and it can be quite time-consuming. Also, it's vital to remember that any failure to complete this exercise accurately and on time may prove very costly in terms of interest and penalties that HMRC will seek to recover. The additional work in producing a lot of PLMDs, where perhaps this is not necessary if we had a PLMD dispensation in place, should drive us to consider obtaining a dispensation. I should say that it's now too late to obtain a dispensation for 2011-12 because HMRC will not backdate them beyond the current tax year. So if your employer or your client doesn't have a dispensation, I wouldn't put you off doing anything other than applying for one for the current year. It won't help us for 2011-12. The key to successful PLMD preparation, completion and submission is to start early. Prepare well. I also recommend that we notify employees well in advance of the submission deadline so that they have a copy of the information and can point out any obvious errors that they're aware of. Remembering to exclude the exempt items, the items that are covered by dispensation, and anything included in a POY settlement agreement will also help to reduce the job to hand. One very important reminder for you is that this year, for the first time ever, you will be able to go onto the AAT website and practice completing P11Ds using the e-learning P11D modules that I have to say have taken quite some time to put together. I hope you'll find that these podcasts will supplement those e-learning modules and that you will have a successful time in completing the 2011-12 P11Ds. Thank you very much for listening.